Hello and welcome to episode 39 of Tabletop Game Talk, a show where we talk about tabletop games of all types. I'm one of your hosts, Josh.
I'm Chris.
And I'm Kitty.
Today we'll be talking about traveling with games. We'll talk about some games that are well suited for traveling, as well as games that we can modify to travel better. But first, a thank you to our Patreon friends of the show, Emil Jiljam, Shane Paul, George, and Adam Harrison. Also, thank you to our newest patron, Stephen Seitz. And also a thank you to all of our other Patreons as well.
Welcome, Stephen. Thank you. So first, let's start up with some announcements. And we're announcing our newest giveaway.
Hooray!
Yay! So I was waiting for it to actually have this in hand because I didn't want to promise it and then have it be like delayed
or
anything like that.
Snatch it away.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I received the box in the mail between now and the last time we recorded. It hasn't even been opened, so I'm probably just going to put a new label on it and send it out. Everyone's like, what are you talking about? What are you talking about? So what we're talking about is Wave 2 of Mechs versus Minions. So I have Wave 1. I've played the game. I love the game. I haven't made you guys play it yet, have
I? No, I'm really dying to play it as well.
So that'll be... We're going to do a game night this week. We'll just play that.
Nice.
Sydney's cramming for her test, next CPA test on Monday. So we'll play Mechs versus Minions some night.
Okay.
Sounds good.
Yeah, it'll be fun. So the deadline is Wednesday, June 14th. That's essentially 30 days from now. And same thing as always, go to our website, tabletopgametalk.com, click on the giveaways button, and you'll have a little survey link there that you can click on, and you'll give me your name, email address, and different information. There is a question on there that you'll need to fill out. Once I have that, you're entered. If you've already done that for a previous contest, you should have your own personal link. And if you don't have that link, you can get it through that giveaway page as well. The winner will be announced at our Origins live show. So right now, we will have an Origins live show. I don't know exactly when it is. There was some mix-up in scheduling, but I talked to them today, and they're sorting it out. So hopefully on our next episode, I'll let you know exactly what it is.
I had a bit of a freak out when you said we were actually going to be in the schedule of Origins. We've made it, man. Yeah. We're like going to be in the book.
We're in the schedule at Gen Con.
I was going to say, wait for it. Yeah.
Yeah. So Gen Con is confirmed. We will be doing a live Gen Con show on August 18th, 6 p.m. That's a Friday. It'll be me and Kitty. Kitty has 95% committed to being there.
Yes. I won't be there for all of Gen Con, but I will be there for our show.
All right. Josh is going to be watching a solar eclipse that day.
Oh, yeah. In Madras, Oregon. Can't wait.
So maybe we'll just Skype you in.
Yeah, I mean, you can do it.
Yeah, we'll put like an iPad of you and just have a face so you can like look at the audience.
Like the episode of Psych.
Yes.
Where Sean goes around solving crimes as an iPad. Isn't he in the hospital?
Well, I was actually thinking the episode of South Park where they were like the Avengers and Stan wasn't allowed to leave the house, so he had to Skype in through iPad, FaceTime.
I haven't seen that one. I'll have to check it out.
Yeah. No, it's a fantastic one.
They're both great episodes of good shows.
Yeah. So let's get your face in there that way. This will work. So we're going to announce it there at Origins. You do not have to be present to win, but if you do... You get a handshake, and I'll hand it to you right then and there. Let me know. Well, actually, you won't know. I will hand it to you on that day. I'm not going to carry it to the to the seminar, but I will give it to you that day if you're there. Anyway, if you are going to be at Origins, let us know. So we'll be happy to meet up. I want to play some games with people. I don't tend to have tickets for Origins, so I'm just kind of floating around and open to do whatever. So Origin is in Columbus, Ohio. It is June 14th, that weekend of. And yeah, I'm really looking forward to it.
And definitely see you there at the werewolf nighttime playing. Like, that was my favorite things at Origins last time. So I'm looking forward to doing that again.
Yep. Yeah. Like, seriously, though, reach out to us. Let us know. Yeah. We will probably be wearing Tabletop Game Talk shirts through much of the convention. I'll probably be wearing one every day just because.
Yeah.
I need more shirts.
Yeah. We're going to try to get some more printed between now and then. So you'll recognize us. We should each get a shirt that like points from us. I'm like, I'm this one, I'm that one.
I like it.
I'm easy to spot though.
So. Yeah. I'm the girl in the middle. Let's see. Last week I mentioned that King of Tokyo was the game that had a copyright infringement from China. It wasn't Kings of Tokyo. It was another game, not quite as big, but popular, which was got it mixed up in my head. But it was Bang, which was the game that was essentially completely rethemed, but with all the same rules. So they took out all the IP, but kept all the rules. And that's the court case that kind of decided that you can't be sued, or you can't copyright or patent a rule system, is really what that came to. So I'm going to put that link in the show notes. It's actually, there's a link to the law. It's like the whole, an article about the finding, which is really interesting if you're interested in that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And that came up because we were asked if we thought Villages of Valeria was too close to Lords of Waterdeep. Now, Villages of Valeria is a game that I've wanted to, you know, check out for a while. So this kind of like piqued my interest, and I said, okay, I'm going to try them both. Well, I've played Waterdeep dozens and dozens of times, but I'm going to try a Villages of Valeria and see how close it is. The verdict is, and this is just me, because
we all played Villages of Valeria today, but me and Josh have yet to play Waterdeep.
So. And also, I remember this happening once with some other couple of games, and I forget which games it was. And you were like, there's no way these two games are similar at all. And I was like, no, man, I totally see the similarity here. So it could be...
This is Chris's word.
This is me. I don't know that Villages of Valeria is in any way even sort of kind of like Lords of Waterdeep at all. And this is my defense to this.
Right.
Lords of Waterdeep is a worker placement game with lots of cube pushing. So cubes represent different guys, warriors, clerics, priests, and rogues. And you're trying to get these things plus some gold so you can go on quests, and quests give you points. You also are buying buildings. That's important. You're buying buildings that you put, and then you own those buildings, but other people can use your buildings. They just have to pay you gold. That's where the similarity is between Lords of Waterdeep and Villages of Valeria. Because Villages of Valeria is not really a worker placement game. Right. Each turn, someone's selecting an action, and there's a follow mechanic, so you can follow that action. You don't get as good a reward from it. And you have cards that can represent buildings, but you can also turn those into resources. If you turn them into buildings, those buildings are still yours, but if you turn them into resources, other people can spend money on your resources and they give you gold. And you're attempting, you can also recruit adventurers, but those are just cards that really work just like buildings, and that they all give you victory points and special powers. I enjoy them both. I think that there are elements of Villages of Valeria, but they're different enough where I would play either one for different reasons. I think Villages of Valeria is a much shorter game.
I was going to say, it seems much shorter and it seems much more transportable.
Yes. And since we're talking today, about games that are transportable, this is actually a really good comparison of two games. And we're going to talk about these a little bit more to that exact effect, because this is the kind of tip where it's like, you know, if you have a big game that you really like, but there's a small equivalent that's close, that might be a way of traveling with it. And this is kind of your, you know, Lords of Waterdeep light game. So just wanted to throw that in there. Let's get on to Kickstarters. So first, I'm going to throw on here, we had a tip from a listener about a game called... Wanted Earth. Now, Wanted Earth is a action-packed miniature board game for 1 to 7 players. Play as heroes defending Earth or alien races trying to take it over. I just started looking at this about 10 minutes before we hit record, so I have not backed it yet, so I'm not going to tell anyone that I've backed it. If you're following me on Kickstarter, you'll know exactly when that happens, which will probably be in about an hour and a half from now. If you aren't following me on Kickstarter and you want to, you have to friend me on Facebook first. So you can go to our Facebook page, which is...
It's facebook.com/tabletopgametalk, I think.
Tabletop Game Talk Podcast.
Is it? Okay.
Yep. So if you go to there, you can find me. On Facebook, I believe I'm Steel22374. And if you search for me that way, you'll find me. But if you find me through the Tabletop Game Talk page...
Yes. Tabletop Game Talk Podcast.
Yep.
On Facebook.
Yep. So go there, friend me, and then you can follow me on Kickstarter. So that's a long way of saying I'm about to go through 4 Kickstarters I did kickstart, and Samir helps me out with some ways of breaking this habit. Samir, I'm probably going to let you down, but... So, Path of Light and Shadows. This is their tagline. A massive empire building experience for 2 to 4 players. This is from Indie Board and Games. I really like a lot of their games. This is their first like big Xbox game. The base price is $70, and it really does. It looks really nice. Indie Board and Games have done a number of Kickstarters, so I have no doubt that they're going to be able to fulfill it. And again, I've met the team that does it. They don't know me, but I trust them. So I'm like, all right, done.
And wait, can you give me a quick in a nutshell of what empire building experience means?
That's a good question. Yeah. That I can bring up. But essentially, empire building would be anything where, kind of like Villages of Valeria, where you start out small,
right,
and you're building up, you're adding buildings, adding resource, you know, spending resources to get better so you can be the best thing ever.
Right.
And really what it comes down to is this particular one is really pretty too. I'm jumping ahead a little bit, but Samir sent an email saying, you know, some good ways of kicking your Kickstarter habit, you know, don't buy anything on your phone. I agree. I don't know if the iPad counts because that's where I do most of my Kickstarter shopping. I try to look at least a little bit at things before I click buy without just looking at the fancy pictures and components. So this is my new rule. I need to watch a gameplay video first. So if there's a gameplay video, I will watch it, and then that's what I'll decide.
I was surprised that you don't currently do that. I was kind of like, what? Like, you just buy things because you look at it. Oh, it looks nice. It looks so pretty. I'm just going to have that.
Have you met Chris?
Well, I know, but I thought he listens and watches to lots of playthroughs. I had no idea you didn't look at them for Kickstarter.
So I just brought up the Kickstarter page for Path of Light and Shadow, and I'm just scrolling through. It does look very
gorgeous. I'll give you that.
Like, look at all these cards, Josh. Look at all these miniatures. There's so many miniatures.
Sure.
And different colors. And there's dice. Look at all the dice.
Right.
And so then I just clicked the button.
The Kickstarter's made it very easy for you to become addicted and stay addicted, I take it.
That and Apple Pay.
Right.
Yeah, I just put my fingerprint on the button and I don't even have to do anything else.
It's you need to undo that or something.
You have to type in that password, Chris.
Yeah.
Then it would be harder to buy stuff.
Yes, exactly.
Speaking of harder to buy stuff, Diceborne Heroes, a co-op dice adventure game. This one I bought because, two reasons. This is not super expensive, but I've been toying around with the idea of having a rolling just regular six-sided dice and matching them with different adventure character cards to do certain things. And that's exactly what this game is. So it's 1-4-player co-op dice game inspired by Japanese role-playing games. This is their tagline. Basically, the mechanics look really quick and easy. And again, a lot of times I've mentioned it before, I love exploring systems. And this is a system very close to something that I had in mind. So I'm picking this up for that reason. The print and play is only $15. So if you back at $15, you can download all the cards. And if you have dice, because you don't need any special dice, it's just six-sided dice. So you could go through it there. But you can get the full game for $40. So I'm like, okay, I'll give that a shot. And then the other one, this one I backed last night. I was leading into another thing I did. I just interviewed JT from The Game Crafter this last Thursday, and then the episode dropped on Friday. Actually, I interviewed on Wednesday, the episode dropped on Friday. You guys have not listened to that episode yet.
No.
And I say yet because you guys are going to want to listen to it after this.
Okay. I'll take your word for it.
So JT is one of the founders of The Game Crafter. The Game Crafter is essentially a site you can go to prototype games, make games, talk to other people who are making games, say, hey, check out my game. Hey, I'm throwing this idea around. It's where I do all my upgrade components from. So like I buy all my extra like meeples and stuff from them. And so I was talking to him and they have a number of contests. So if you're a budding game designer, contests are a great way to like force yourself to complete something.
Oh, yeah.
Because you want to enter the contest, you have to get it to a certain thing. So I'd been throwing around an idea and I even had a mock-up of it before I talked to him. And then he talked about this hidden movement contest. I'm like, well, I think my game qualifies under that. So I spent all day Saturday going through, getting some like placeholder art, putting everything on the site. And now I have a prototype that's on its way to me. Now, we've already played it. I played this game with Sydney a few times. I played it with Sarah a few times. It's like a viable game. I haven't played it with you guys yet.
Yeah.
But once the prototype gets here, we'll try that out.
This is exciting.
That's a long way of saying, while I was on the site, there's an active chat box there. And so there's a lot of people talking about, hey, check out my game, or hey, this idea or that idea. And it's a very, very friendly community. And someone came on and they just published their Kickstarter. And they were, you know, kind of nervous because you put up a Kickstarter, you're like, So, and he put a link to it. He's like, first he gave the private link to it. It says, hey, check out this page. Do you see anything wrong with it? And so a few people did, and I was still uploading images and stuff. And then they started, someone mentions like, wow, those dice towers look amazing. I'm like, oh, that's interesting. So I clicked on the link, and hardwood dice towers, dice storage, rollers, and D&D coasters. Now, I didn't get the coasters because I get my coasters through RPG Coasters, but these dice towers are amazing. They're cylinder-based dice towers. Not only that, he has also dice rolling cups that are like these, like cylinder based, made up of a bunch of different kinds of wood. And there's another one that has like it's a cup, but there's a cap on it. So you can put your dice in there, it becomes a dice roller, and then you can uncap it. And then the dice towers, which get a little bit bigger. He twitches every single thing he makes.
Oh, wow.
So if you order through his Kickstarter and you watch his Twitch channel, you can see him making the dice tower or cup or whatever that you're going to be getting.
Oh, cool. I can just imagine it's like a sort of Ron Swanson moment where he's there with his, with his little tools and he's just like shaving bits of wood off and stuff. I bet it looks amazing.
I'm not going to lie. I watch way too much people handcrafting weird stuff on YouTube.
Nice.
Yeah. All I know is I'm like, all right, this is definitely worth, like, I don't normally like dice towers, but these ones look so cool. So I'm going to put a link to his Twitch channel, and I'll put a link to all the Kickstarters as well in the show notes, but definitely worth checking out. So
nice.
Anyway, I took up a lot of time, so Kitty, get me out of this.
All right. Let's get to some feedback about our past episodes. If you have feedback about this or any of our previous episodes, email us at tabletopgametalk@gmail.com. Go to our Board Game Geek forum, easily found at tabletopgametalk.com/BGG, and become part of the conversation.
Yes, so we have.
Do this again?
We didn't proofread the notes well enough because it says from and then there's no name. But
I did point out that there were issues with the feedback segment. I just assumed that you fixed them.
Yeah,
that's on happen. Me. You know what they say about assuming.
But I can start from anonymous. There is a whole subgenre of trick taking called the ladder trick taking. Think a-hole from college. Where you are trying to run your hand out to score bonus points. The most famous one is Tichu. Tichu has a strong following among spades players. It spawns some spin-offs in Haggis and Chimera for specific play accounts. What makes these three unique is you score points by bidding how many tricks you can acquire. In addition, some of the cards are point cards that offer points as well. He also says, two of my favorite trick-taking games, Diamonds by Mike Fitzgerald and published by Stronghold Games. Diamonds is unique because it adds a few fiddly bits that board games have with using plastic crystals for scoring, and it plays 2 to 6 players. And the personal favorite is Dwarf King, or The Dwarf King. This game only has 3 suits and plays 3 to 5 all equally well. What makes this game unique is that every round of the 7 rounds played, the person that gets the 5 of the knights, one of the suits, picks a tile and chooses one of 2 scoring options for the round. Sometimes the rules are just getting negative points for the tricks that meet a certain condition. This means that the winner of the game after 7 rounds is the person with the lowest negative value, and it can happen. I played a game once where my cumulative score was -1, while everyone had more negative points. I should also mention that there are only 3 suits, and every round you also insert a special card that breaks the normal rules. This game is pure feduti random madness.
So this is Michael Smith.
Right.
So
thank you, Michael.
Sorry, Michael. And I did reply directly back to him because all of the games he mentioned, I did pick up and I now own. The Dwarf King one I'm actually looking forward to.
It sounds really interesting.
Yeah. I like the idea that, you know, it's still the high score wins, but if everyone's negative, it's just the person that has the least negative.
Yeah.
Right. And I like that there are people out there that are really passionate about trick-taking games. Because they're not bad games. It's just a different kind of game. And it's easy to say. It's like, oh, they're more shallow or there's not enough strategy. I think the bidding games are the ones that have the most strategy. Because
yes.
You have to, like, you know, you're bidding something, you're making this plan, and then you have to figure out how to follow through with that plan. So I'm looking forward to playing both of these. Both of them look great. Diamonds and Dwarf King are the ones I'm talking about. Was it Teach You? Mm. This one I've heard, actually I've played it a couple times. It's really straightforward, but there's a lot of strategy to it, to be honest, because you don't, it's there, you have more cards in hand, so you have more options of how you follow. And then there's trump, like these two special cards, and like when like you the play jokers. Them. Yeah. So it's an interesting game for sure. If you haven't played Teach You, you should definitely check that out, because that one's like a classic. And I already mentioned that Sam had sent me some emails trying to get me off of Kickstarter. Sam, we'll see what we can do. Also, if you see any good Kickstarter, send them my way. And Taryn sent us an email commenting on the Gramecrafter interview with JT. So he had pointed me to a few Kickstarters that I picked up. And he says, I no longer feel bad about turning you on to Galaxies of Tryon and Ray Guns and Rocket Ships. I suspect the Gamecrafter is going to cost me a lot more in terms of time and money than those two Kickstarters. It's also very cool that he is not just the founder, but he's a customer too. The Captain is Dead is at the top of my list, want list for new games. So the Captain is Dead has been picked up by, I want to say Asmodee, which is one of the largest game companies. I want to say Asmodee, I think so anyway. So now he is officially published. So he's been doing game design and stuff for 20 years. He has other business, he has three different businesses. The Gamecrafter is one of them. And so he's been doing kind of amateur game design forever. And now the Captain is Dead just happens to be the one that's getting picked up and is going to be all over. But he has his own podcast called the Official Gamecrafter Podcast, which is really quite good. And he goes into details on these kinds of things. He's a very transparent guy. Also just a cool guy in general. But he's like, yeah, I might make some money off of this now that it's published, but I'm still not going to be retiring. You know, if he sells, you know, they'll print like 10,000 copies of this game, which is still a huge print run. You know, he might see $5,000 of it.
Right.
You know, of the overall profits. It's like, it's nice, but it's not, you don't get rich in game design.
Yep.
So I wish you did.
All right. So we're moving on to our quick question. It's a question from one of our listeners that won't fill an entire show topic, but we think is interesting nonetheless. Today's question comes from Steven Seitz. He asks, what is the best and cheapest way to start a collection of games? I was thinking about checking out some thrift stores Goodwill to see if I could find any games, but unsure how likely those games are to have all the pieces. I was thinking, even if they don't, maybe you could order replacements, or like you spoke about in tricking out your games, use pieces from other games. But what do you guys recommend, and where do you guys purchase your games if they aren't brand new?
So I only purchase new things. I'd say there's probably maybe three or four games in my entire collection that I bought used.
A little bit of a snob.
A little bit. This is the whole new car thing. Mm-hmm. Like, it's like, oh, why get a used car when I can buy this one new for twice as much?
Oh, God. Whereas I'm very much of the, let somebody else pay that big drop for driving it off the lot. Absolutely. I don't care. I'm going to buy it a year later when they're like, I need another new car. I used this one up.
Yeah. I'm trying to buy more used games. I did actually just pick up a game used, last or 2 weeks ago. And I got that from the resale section of a game store that I really trust. So knowing that, you know, they are checking it out, there's a sheet with it that says all the components are there, you know, they've been punched out, but only played once or twice, which is more often than not what's going to happen for used games. It's been played once or twice, if at all. Mm-hmm. So if you have a game store, don't be afraid to go in and say, hey, do you guys sell used games? Oftentimes they will. They'll sell it on consignment. It's really low risk to them. So that's one way of doing it. Kickstarter, that's a good way of building your game collection. It's not necessarily the cheapest way because you're oftentimes paying close to retail prices. Even if you have a deal, you're still likely to be able to get it cheaper after it's been in retail. The thing with Kickstarters is if you might not ever have a chance to get it in retail. So it could be like a successful game, but it sells out and it's just not popular enough to have a second print run.
You should also check out Kickstarter for print and plays.
Yes.
That's a really good way to get a less expensive version where, especially if you have some of these pieces we talked about in tricking out your games, you can really make it feel like a real game,
yep,
not just something you printed out.
Yep. Absolutely. My tip was just going to be to, you know, come down to Chicago, message Chris before you get here and just say, please, sir, can I have some of your games you don't play so much of anymore? Because he's got so many. I mean, he could probably give some of these away. So that's my tip.
I was going to say that was a great British accent.
But, that was my Dick Van Dyke from Mary Poppins, which is what every single American seems to do when they like to imitate me.
Chimney.
Absolutely, governor.
In all seriousness, though, if you're in Chicago and you want to take some of my games off my... There's a lot of these that I would be more than happy to part with for pennies on the dollar just to make room. If you're looking at... So I'm terrible with the YouTube. It's usually within before the next episode of the podcast drops that I get the YouTube video up. But if you watch any of our YouTube versions and you look behind Kitty, you just see this pile of games that keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger.
It's crazy.
It's not pretty.
Pretty soon I'll just be behind a wall of games. You'll just hear my voice coming out. You can see just my eyes.
It's not many addictions where you drowning see a physical manifestation of the addiction. Yeah. It's kind of growing like a you know, self-replicating monster. It's amazing.
Yeah. So, Stephen, if you are in Chicago, ping me. I'll set you up with some games. Also, Amazon used. So just about every thing on Amazon you can buy, there's a used button, and you can find those for relatively cheap. Ding and dent sales. A lot of times Cool Stuff Inc. will have ding and dent sales. So the box is dented or something like that, and they can't sell it at full price. And you'll get anywhere from 20 to 50% off a lot of those things. And you'll at conventions, a lot of times you'll see that as well. Otherwise, don't worry about buying a game collection all at once. So don't do what I do and get 3 or 4 games a week, because you're not going to be able to play them fast enough. Like, I have 2 or 3 game nights a week, and I still don't get all the games to the table that I want to.
So, if you're starting a new collection too, make sure you are playing the games before you buy them, especially if cost is a concern. Go somewhere, find someone else who has the game, play it with them, and make sure it's not something like Chris does all the time. You're going to open up, play once, and go, not for me.
Yeah. Honestly, buying games just to see if you like them shouldn't be the first thing for most people. I do it. We make fun of it. I enjoy it. That's where my disposable income goes, is buying games. I think of games as art, actually. You know, that's why when I look at something that looks awesome, I'm like, that's a piece of art. And having it on the shelf and having something that's really cool and tactile, that I get a lot of enjoyment out of, even if I don't play the game. So, but not everyone is like that. And most people should play the game first, find out that they really like it, and then go out and invest in it and do all the upgradings and, you know, get a hold of Christy on Board Game Geek. She'll give you a lot of ideas on how to make your game awesome. So she gave us a lot of help on this one, on this episode too. So, all right. Let's go talk about what we're going to talk about, shall we?
In this episode, we're talking about traveling with games. There are some games that are well suited to this. Others we wish were better suited. And we got a ton of input into this episode. So with your help, let's talk travel and board games.
Yeah, so I had I put 3 bullet points in here. Games that are good to travel with, games that have a small footprint when you travel, and games that you can repackage. And then I forgot to hit subscribe on this particular thread. I'm like, no one seems to care about this topic. So, and then as I'm like just manualing to the thread, I'm like, oh, wait, nope, there's a huge list here.
Great input.
Yes, great input. So let's just kind of what the topic is, traveling with games. You're a board game person. You want to play board games. And when you're on vacation, playing board games is something that you want to do. And when I say board games, I also mean card games or just any kind of games. You want to play games.
Tabletop games.
Video games are easy, right?
Yes.
You know, I have them on
my... We talked about this a lot on our mobile tablet apps, whatever that episode name was.
Yeah, they're portable. You have your phone, your iPad. It's all right there. But it doesn't give you the tactile feel. Doesn't give you the setup feel of it. So there's a few solutions to this. First is pick games that are easy to travel with, that automatically, without changing the box, are nice and easy to do. We just got done playing Villages of Valeria, and it is a very small box game. It is 2 decks of cards, essentially. It takes up about, I don't know, I'd say maybe a 2-foot by 3-foot table if you were like taking up lots of space, but you could do it in a 2 by 2 foot area. And this game could be played wherever, basically. There's a downside to it, but what do you guys think of, like, a card game for traveling?
Yeah, I mean, most card games lend themselves fairly well, but you have to be careful. You're not using a card game that actually, when you think about it, has a really big footprint. Like, this game, you know, we did have to lay out a few cards. I mean, it wasn't crazy big in terms of how much we were laying out. But some games, like, you're almost building a board as you put the cards out. So you've got to think a little bit when you're picking these things, yeah.
Yeah, so I think there's two different kinds of games to travel with. There's games to play, like, while you're traveling, which this might not be the best for. But this is a great game to bring with you to a place. Like, yeah. I'm going on vacation. We're going to stay at a hotel for a week. The hotel has a table. You can play on the whole table. You just don't want to, you know, I'm not going to pack Risk to bring to the hotel with me, no matter how big the table is at the hotel.
Right.
So I think this is a really good one for, I think it was Christy even said this, was like, always ditch the box.
Yes.
This whole box could probably fit inside a sandwich bag.
Oh, yeah.
You could bring this whole game inside a sandwich bag, along with any tiny epic game, fill in the blank after.
I was going to say, the Tiny Epic series almost should get its entire own episode. In fact, I reached out to them to see if I can't get an interview, so they might get their own episode. But this has about 100 cards in it, and that's total. So it's 100 cards and 30 little tiny wooden gold chits. And that's it. You know, you can put that in a sandwich bag without a problem. You can put it in my little, I think my 3-inch by 4-inch bags. It just fits the whole thing. And boom, even the instructions would potentially fit with that. Now, we had a number of people say that instruction books, either A, get a PDF of them, so you don't need to carry them around, or put all the instruction books that you're going to need into just a folder and put it, pack it flat someplace. It doesn't need to go with the game.
If you're too lazy to find a PDF, take pictures of the important parts on your phone.
Yep.
Create a little album on your phone. I have so many weird little albums of, like, oh, all of my schedules for work and, like, all of the weird stuff. So that's my go-to.
I'm trying to find who put this, who left the feedback, but...
Well, I had someone, I remember Michael was saying... Feedback? Well, no, Michael was saying that he has a couple of games that were from a pack of games series where they actually, like, go down, they actually make the card games. It's Jim and S-O-W, where it goes all the way down to, like, the size of, like, a chewing gum package. It's like really, really small. So there are some companies out there doing this type of thing where they miniaturize, like, a popular games.
Yeah. Cause they're basically, like, called micro games. Love Letter is actually probably the most popular of the micro games. The entire game is 12 cards, 12 or 13, but it's like, that's it. That's the whole game. So those kinds of games travel very, very well. Now, one of the things that someone had mentioned, and I'll find the name here, but someone had mentioned that they didn't want to travel with the board, so they took a picture of the board.
Yeah, I was just looking at
that.
That
was such a smart idea.
Yeah, they were playing solo, so it didn't really matter that they were just going from the picture.
This was Scott.
I often do that when I'm playing Resistance. I'll just, like, I don't own a copy of Resistance, but you can play with, you know, a pack of normal cards for the evil and bad people and some other bits and pieces around the house. And then I just get the board, a picture of the board online. And, like, oh, yeah, it's this many for this many players.
I don't think we've played Insider with the actual Insider cards since the very first time.
Right.
Ever since then.
It's true. We've just been making up the administrator, I don't remember even what the role is. The person who's running it writes the word and then invites the insider to look at it. Yeah. You have to be a little bit careful with handwriting. Yeah. Telestrations is also one. You can super easy do it with paper and pens.
Right. You can just play it. So some games, you don't even need to travel with them because the rule set's so generic that, well, not generic, but the rule set's so
simple, elegant,
that you can use any components to put it together.
Yeah.
Now, let's talk Tiny Epic Games for a little bit. It's Tom Vassell, with part of the Dice Tower. He hates when people call something epic when it's not, like, this huge thing. But I think the Tiny Epic series is one of the most brilliant series ever. There are a handful, like 4 or 5. I'll go through them now. Tiny Epic Kingdoms is an area control game. So with asymmetric player types and leveling, and so there's a tech tree, there's combat, it's a full-on area control game that fits in a 4-inch by 6-inch box.
And that's a 5x7.
A 5x7-inch box. And it just, you know, it sits there and it is a full game. They have an ultra tiny Epic Kingdoms. This is his first game. It literally is a size of a deck of cards.
Wow.
That entire game is in one deck of card box. Like that, there's nothing really more portable than that. And it's a huge area control.
You're saying there's a lot game. To the game.
Oh, yeah. Strategy, it's heavy. The Tiny Epic games, there's a lot into them. Yeah. Tiny Epic Galaxies was the next one. This is a Space 4X game. It's fantastic. There's dice rolling. There's pseudo-combat-esque. There's exploring planets and getting special abilities. It's a full-on game. Tiny Epic Defenders is a co-op game where you're trying to defend the realm from things that are invading. Again, a full-on experience, co-op experience in this small box and a small footprint for the most part. Tiny Epic Westerns is a worker placement game. Like those are games alone, I might not pull them out if I have my entire collection available because there's other games that are bigger and flashier. But when I'm traveling, those are my go-to. And I actually do that. Whenever I travel for conventions, I bring those games with because I can just pull them out and they're ready to play. So other small box games. We'll do the small box games first. But Resistance?
Yep. Pretty much any... Social deduction.
Any social deduction. Werewolf is 15 cards. That's all you need.
Yep.
If you're doing Ultimate Werewolf, there's a bunch more, but...
Again, One White Night Werewolf, again, is a pack of cards and an app on your phone, right?
Yep. And it fits in the same size, small box form factor. We talked trick-taking games. Those are almost in the same small box thing. I do want to say I have tried to play games on the deck of a cruise ship. Don't play card games on the deck of a cruise ship or outside. There's just no way of keeping those cards.
Does it just wobble too much?
It's not the wobbling, it's the wind.
Yeah.
And you're sitting next to the pool.
On the inside of the cruise ship, I'm sure it would be fine.
Okay.
It's just that deck where...
Yep.
Gotcha.
So, Codenames is a good one as well, because you can take... You just pull the cards out, and all you need is the cards. You don't need anything else. Right. So... Travels very, very nicely.
Not Alone.
Not Alone was great. One versus many. Again, you can empty out that box. It's just a deck of cards. Burke's Gambit is I put everything in the pull string in the drawstring bag, and you can. That's everything you need there.
Our new favorite social deduction game. If you didn't know already,
it's amazing. Yeah.
Some of us don't feel the same.
Some of us don't like social deduction games.
It's true.
So small box games in general, they're kind of designed for this. And I look for them. I look for good small box games. In fact, when I do cull my collection, I'll have 50 to 100 big box games. I'm aiming for 50. But probably like 30 to 50 small box games that I'm going to keep as well. Because they're equal... They're different uses, but they're equal in like their fun and gameplay to me.
I have to mention it, and I know we always mention Homeworld, but I love that game for its portability as well. You know, you've got these pieces, these triangular pyramids that tessellate into each other, and it, you know, it really does go down to a micro version, you know, a little, you know, 5x7 box or something like that, or even a small bag. Chris, you even made your custom game. Of Homeworlds, which was a tiny little pack of cards.
Yeah, they were the mini cards. I just made them into cards.
They were tiny. They were like, I don't know, like an inch by inch or something.
Yep.
But that's even another good idea as well. You could even, if there was a game that you loved that you felt like this could be miniaturized, if you did like this or that or turned it mostly into cards, you could go onto one of these sites where you can make your own board game cards or board game pieces.
The Game Crafter.
And miniaturize it yourself. So that's even another option.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's an extreme option, but if you really love a game,
right,
go for it. You can't or should not reuse the same art without reaching out to the developer and getting their permission.
Sure.
Do not infringe on copyrights. We didn't tell you to do
but
that.
Yeah. As we know from earlier, you cannot patent the rule system.
But the rule system,
as long as you don't use the art and the theme and
it is now going to be my life goal to make a portable version of Risk.
All right. It's well, Pyramid there Arcade. You mentioned that because they have World War V in there, which is
it's not Risk, but it's similar. Yeah, Pyramid Arcade. We specifically said Homeworld so far, but any of those games, or at least most of them, you can look at the rule book and like say, all right, we're going to be able to play these five with, you know, just a couple sets of pyramids, throw a few sets of pyramids in a bag, grab the rule book, and you're set. Yep. You can play so many of those games. Yep.
Rule book on PDF.
Oh, yeah, yep. Exactly. I was going to say that's, you yep. know, on Board Game Geek has a lot of them, doesn't it?
Yep. So, yeah, a Pyramid Arcade I recommend for just about anything because the pyramids are practically indestructible. They, yes. It doesn't matter if they get wet. It doesn't matter if you spill ketchup on them. You know, you can.
They don't blow away.
They don't blow away. And if they do, you just pick them up because they're pretty easy to find. And they do pack very well into each other. I have a set that fits into like a 4x7 photo box. It's just this plastic box. And I put, you know, it's a set of, I don't know, like 40, 50, 60 pyramids in that box and a few dice. And it's good to go, and it can play all kinds of games.
And it looks so cool.
And it looks cool on table. You'll always have someone come over and say, "What are you doing?"
Yeah,
it's true.
So that's the small boxes we mentioned. You know, card games you can pull and repackage those. A lot of games, though, you can repackage very easily, regardless of the box size. There are some games that don't serve well for this. Scythe is a really good example of a game that isn't going to travel well no matter how hard you try. There's just a lot of cardboard in there.
Yeah. You're not going to bring Gloomhaven with you.
You're really not. You might be able to bring a scenario or two, but not the whole game.
There's no way.
Not going to happen. But something like Great Western Trail, which is a full-fledged game, the board itself, you're going to need to pack along with, you know, your laptop or something like that. But everything else fits very nicely into little plastic bags that you can pack anywhere you want it to pack. So if you really want to play this game, but you don't want to bring the box, you're fine with doing that. I think it was Michael. He essentially says that, you know, he has a picture. I believe it's Michael. He has a picture where he took the Star Wars Rebellion box and just packed a whole bunch of games inside of that. You know, pick a box with a lot of air, put a whole bunch in there. So now you have that Rebellions box, but that's your full, that's your game kit.
That was from Steve.
Steve. Sorry, Steve.
Was he the one that said he took your little baggies idea for storing all the pieces one step further by putting them in that one big bag?
Yeah, I think that might have been Sam. Right. So I just want to give a shout out to Steve, Michael, Zillin?
I think so.
Sam, Zellin, Sam, Terrence, Christy, Scott, Aaron, Jason, and Steven. Thank you guys all for your input. We're jumping around in your input. Jason actually gave us a list of games, and some of them we've covered and some of them we haven't, but I'm going to go down here. His favorite games to travel with because of the size of things, essentially, is Timelines, Any Tiny Epic Game, Munchkin, another great travel game. If you like Munchkin, it's fantastic. It's just a stack of cards. Burke's Gambit. We love Burke's Gambit too. Or any social deduction game. He mentions that. Codename Scrabble, because it's his wife's favorite. Love Letter. Actually, speaking of letter games, Bananagrams would make a really good
one. Bananagrams would make a really good one.
Which is actually two Love Letter, Farkle, and Bananagrams. Star Trek 5-Year Mission. I haven't played this yet, but I think it's just a deck building game. Red 7, which we know is a trick taking game. Hollywood Game Night. Have not played. Or dominoes, poker decks. Honestly, anytime you travel, you should always have a deck of normal cards because you can get anyone to play.
I feel like Uno should get an honorable mention.
Okay.
Uno is like the mass market go-to. Like when you're traveling, it's so easy to just grab a deck of Uno.
Yeah, especially lots of for families.
Yeah.
For families with kids, it's so easy to learn the rules. And I do think it really teaches you a lot about card games. It's basically Crazy Eights, but with more fun stuff.
Yeah.
You said that with such almost derision, Chris.
So
Chris hates mass market games.
Well, yeah. That's not true, but we have established I am Cult of the New.
That's true.
Yes.
So many of these games like Uno and Risk and Monopoly and stuff, I enjoy them. I have fond memories of them. I may not choose them over something, but also if I'm playing Uno and it gets totally destroyed because it starts raining and I'm at a picnic table,
who cares?
I don't care.
The wind blows some cards around. Who cares?
Exactly.
It's just Uno.
That's true.
You know, there's like a destroyability to it.
Yeah. Nobody is leaving Uno cards.
No.
right. Yeah, because you are kind of funny about that, about your games. You want to keep them all pristine and you're like, oh, you know, Josh, you have a habit of like kneeling your elbows on cards and things. But yeah, I hadn't thought about that aspect. You, if you're traveling, you want it to be somewhat destructible. You can't bring your
durable
lovely game.
Or disposable.
Yeah.
Yes. So a lot of there's travel versions too of a lot of mass market games that are very inexpensive, real easy to take with
Aaron
you.
Mentioned
and if
a
you
few.
Lose the pieces, oh well.
Yep. Aaron mentions magnetic games. So like the classics, you have your chess, your checkers. There's a ton of different magnetic games for that. He mentioned modding Hive. So Hive is a very, they're made of little hex pieces and they're a ceramic of some sort, I think. It's a great game. It's very cerebral chess-like type of game. But if you put little sticker magnets on the bottom and you have a metal sheet, which both of those things are relatively cheap to get, you can use that as a magnetic board. Like think of if you have like a college whiteboard,
right?
A lot of those are magnetic.
I think you could make a mini Santorini. That would be really fun.
That's what he mentioned. He's like, you could also potentially mod Santorini.
It would be really fun.
So if you put magnets in the bottom of each of them on both sides where they would like stick to each other.
Together.
Yep. So I think if I was going to do a mini Santorini, I'd probably not use the base pieces. I'd probably go to GameCrafter and get stacks of pieces and then make them magnetic. So it's the same rules, but different components that you could stack.
Yeah.
Right.
I would think you could get it pretty small because I think it might even be easier to play because you could see more easily what's going on.
Yep. And the Santorini gods are on these nice, colorful, big cards, but it's very easy to take their powers and put them on like a normal size playing card and again, a game crafter or something.
Or mini cards.
Or mini cards, yeah. And just print out the power. So that's the only thing that's on them is the power. And just pick the cards that you know are easy to travel with as opposed to the ones that need a bunch of extra components. So if you really love a game, you know, go back a couple episodes to tricking out your game. And add on to what we're talking about here, because you can do a lot of cool things to make this game something you can bring everywhere. Board Game Geek has a ton of pictures of people who've modded and rethemed games, so kind of give you ideas on that stuff as well.
I forgot to mention it when you were talking about classics and magnetic versions. My dad had a really cool pegboard chess set where it was seriously tiny, maybe 3 inches by 3 inches. And there were little holes for the pieces and all the pieces were little pegs. And it was really fun. And I think that's what got me into playing chess as a little kid was I just wanted to play with that little travel set because it was so cute and miniature.
Well, and that kind of game you can play in the car. You know, the magnetic games, the pegboard games, the things that you can pass the whole board around and nothing moves around.
Yeah, I mean, someone even mentioned actually a good one for the car is RPGs.
Yeah.
I think it might have been Michael. Sorry if I got that wrong. But if you just had like something on a sheet, all the rules are on one sheet for some of these things. And then someone also said choose your own adventure would be a good idea. And I mean, I know that's not typically very tabletop-y, but I got really excited by that. That kind of brought back childhood memories. Yep. And I was like, I love that. I could totally do that. I'll bring one along and play it with Gloria, see if she likes it.
I'm a big fan of Mad Libs.
Yeah.
Mad Libs?
Oh my goodness. Okay. So Mad Libs is a story where some of the words have been removed and you have a list of the parts of speech.
So it's an adjective or a noun or a verb.
Yeah. Nice. So you just fill in the list and then you flip the page and it has the story with the missing words and you read the story and fill in the words from the list.
As you go.
Yeah.
Yes.
Ah, nice.
So I can't believe Josh does not know what Mad Libs is.
That sounds it's pretty American. Right on my
Maybe it street. Is.
Yeah. I've never heard of it.
Now it's I really know what fun. To get it for Christmas.
I mean, are we driving together to some of these conventions?
Oh, we're driving.
Oh, yeah. Like, I know what we're doing in the car now.
All right. Man, let me do it. Yeah, Michael mentioned specifically one-sheet role-playing games. So there's a lot of these. Like, you have big market, mainstream role-playing games, Dungeons & Dragons, Pathfinder. There's many others. You also have small book role-playing games, which are kind of like digest form and usually soft cover. So those ones are kind of more indie. And then you have micro role-playing games, which are a single sheet of paper, usually front and back, but that's it. So he's like, these are good games for the car because all the rules are right there. And some of them are diceless, so you don't need to do dice. In fact, Fiasco would make a good car game because technically there's dice involved in Fiasco, but you can get dice rollers to replace all of the dice for anything you need.
We've often done this playing Dungeons and Dragons out at the bar or something where we're all just rolling dice on our phones.
Yep.
So
Yep. So those are easy ways to travel too. And if it's in your imagination or everything's on your phone, then that's a good way to travel as well. So we talked about Steve's reboxing. We talked about Michael's Star Wars. He also mentions this one I'll quote. I've seen a few alternate store solutions such as Bitbox and Kickstarter, but game boxes are the thing I love so much and can't see myself using rather than the original game box. Though some games have ridiculous boxes for what's inside, I'm considering going to GameCrafter and getting custom boxes printed for the game. Which is, again, I don't think I can pimp the GameCrafter enough. And also, I get no kickback from it whatsoever. So this is just an honest thing. But they have a lot of different storage solutions as well. So if you want to, like, this game came in this huge box, I just want a small box, they will give you a box and you can print anything you want on it. So you can kind of make yourself a mini version of whatever box. Nice. But I agree with him here. I really think that the box itself, like I said, I look at games as pieces of art. So even though I may temporarily unpack a game, I'm going to put all the pieces back into it when I'm done.
I feel the same way.
Yep. Scott does mention, careful with air travel. If you pack a whole bunch of cards in a block, it shows up as just a dense thing on the X-ray machine. I remember
reading that, yeah.
Yep. And they will stop you. And they will be like, okay, what's going on here? And they will fan through all of your cards.
Yep.
Poker chips are the same thing. So Splendor. I have a portable version of Splendor where I just took all the poker chips and the cards and I put it into like a double-sized deck box. And it fits perfectly. But now I have a dense stack of poker chips.
The denseness, probably.
Every single time I go to the airport, they stop me for that. So now Scott recommends it as well, and I agree. Take those out and just take them out like they're a laptop. Put them on a separate bin. It'll save you a whole lot of time.
That's so funny that you'll get pulled aside for that. Like, what are the chances that would be the case?
Right? Yeah, it's so dense. I just imagine how thick that is.
And yet I hear all kinds of crazy stories of people getting through with so much stuff that shouldn't go through.
Yeah.
But you can't bring a really dense deck of cards. Nope. Forget it.
Terrence recommends board game bands. They're these rubber bands that are like are two directional.
Oh, yeah, it looks like you're wrapping a present.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
You know, like a rubber band.
It's a rubber band that...
So that it doesn't...
Is like a plus as opposed to just a ring.
So, yeah, so that you wrap it one way and then also the other way.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
So the lid doesn't go flying off.
Right. So that's really good for traveling.
Everywhere.
Careful with how long you leave those rubber bands on. Most rubber bands will just kind of start to corrode and fall apart.
I would think this is kind of like taking the pieces out of the box. Right. You do it while you travel. We don't recommend any of these long term because I would worry about, I'm not even as bad as Chris is about my games getting damaged, but like card corners getting bent and like things getting folded or ripped.
So. Yeah. Sam recommends for a small table footprint, games like Friday or Islands of Dr. Maru. Says not only when you're traveling, we talked a little bit, you want to have it easy to travel with, you need to have a small footprint oftentimes as well. So those are kind of good things to know about. Zelen, is that what we decided it was?
I think so.
X-E-L-Y-N. I'm sorry if I'm saying it wrong. Says he mostly just packs card games like The Game and Exploding Kittens. The Game is the worst name for a game ever. Try searching for that. I want to hear about The Game. It's actually not a bad game. It's a cooperative game where there's four. You have cards from 1 to 100 and you're trying, and you have four columns and you're trying to essentially put all the cards in sequential order, either upwards or downwards, and you're playing with your other people, and you can't really communicate exactly what you're going to do. He's like, I have a high card. Don't play anything too high or whatever. Mm. But it makes for a very interesting game. It just doesn't have a name.
Right.
So this reminded me of a thing that now I have to talk about where there's a game that you play all the time, and you only lose it when you think about the game. Has no name. And you just go like, oh, I just thought about the game. I just lost the game, guys.
Oh, I feel like I've kind of heard of that. Yeah, and it's like some weird...
like at summer camp, or I used to go on mission trips at my church, that kind of stuff, where we'd all play the game. And then somebody would go, oh, I just lost the game. And then everyone would go, ah, me too. And then we'd forget about it for like 4 hours.
So you're
hours
only
until
ever
somebody else
really,
went.
You're only really ever actively playing this game whilst you're losing it.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, that's a bit of a you would mind. Do at camp. Yeah. And of course, Christy hit put some pictures up on the Board Game Geek thread, so check that out.
A few people put up some really
good
pictures.
Yeah, there's some really good pictures.
Check it out.
One of the things that she points out is something called the quiver, which I believe, just imagine putting, I don't know, maybe 2,000 cards, something, some crazy number into this zipper package. Like it's a hard
shell zipper.
It was
like
thing.
At least 12 inches long. It was,
yeah. It's, there's so many cards you could put in there. But she has, and all pointed out, like, this is what this game is. This is what this game is. This is what this game is. And just had all of these different options there, which was fantastic. She also mentions that you can take games that just have flat, components and just put those into a folder or something. She mentions Sherlock Holmes Consulting Detective as an option. It's like everything's flat, so you can just put it. It's easy to pack up and store. Yeah, I think we've covered quite a bit of.
And this is pretty good. Yeah, I'm impressed.
We've gone as far in depth as I'd care.
I'm very impressed. I'm very impressed with the feedback we got this week. Yeah. It was really good input.
So we talked about games that were good to travel with. We talked about games that have a relatively small footprint. And also, when in doubt, Are You a Werewolf is the default. Or Mafia, if you're just using a deck of cards. Games that you can repackage. So, unless there's anything more, let's go to our new post-topic section. There's a number of housekeeping things that we've kind of skipped from the beginning because we didn't want to like really talk about iTunes reviews and things like that. It seemed a little self-serving, but now I'm like, but we're not saying thank you to the people that are doing that. So we're going to do that near the end of the show, just before we do the out credits. And I have some catch up to do here because we get a good number of iTunes reviews and we appreciate all of them. I read them all.
Each and every one of them means so much to us.
Yes. Even the 4-star ones, you know who you are. but that's good because there's like, we want to be better. So if there's something we're not doing, we want to know.
I welcome it.
Yep. And you can always feel free to email us too. And we have, and this is actually one of the things I got an email about a couple months ago. And it's sort of why I dropped this from the beginning of the show, because I didn't want to put a whole bunch of this stuff at the beginning. So anyway, there won't be as much intro on future episodes. We just assume that you listen to these in order and you'll understand all of this in the future. But thank you for Jarheart53. Me versus you asked if we're going to upload any of our live plays. Probably not for a number of reasons. It's really, really hard to record them. Then they need to be edited down because you do not want to watch Josh make a decision for 3 hours. Josh is looking at me evilly, but
this is the second time we've made fun of him today.
the exaggeration continues.
But we might do some special things. Speaking of special things, thanks for special, spelled S_P_E_CIAL. This one's going to be Schwinnen Fettman. He lives in Chicago and he says he wants to hang out with us.
Ooh.
I'm in.
Awesome. Just, yeah.
Shoot. If you're listening, shoot us an email, tabletopgametalk@gmail.com, and we'll meet up at a like Guthrie's or something and play a game. Let's see. Knight Rider 75. Chivinger. Dano Walker wants more of the British guy.
I'm coming at you.
Just say it. I think he specifically says he needs to talk more. Or no, I want to hear more of the British guy. Nice accent.
Sweet.
Then we have SSI Tesevit. SSII. TESBD. He says he came to us for Gloomhaven and he stays for my Kickstarter addiction. So I won't let you down. But thanks for everyone and all of the reviews. If you want to leave us a review, it really helps us out. We have a shortcut, tabletopgametalk.com/review. That'll help you get there.
It's barely a shortcut.
Yeah. Then there's just 12 really more steps and
blame Apple.
Yeah. Apple Podcasts. Now they rebrand it. So it's not iTunes anymore. It's Apple Podcasts.
Oh.
Yeah. Also, we want to thank all of our patrons. There was a few episodes where I wanted to shorten the outro a little bit. So I was like, okay, we'll just do the X level or higher for the outro. That's, we don't like that. We appreciate everyone.
Chris.
Yeah. Well, you didn't have to shame me all that much. We appreciate everyone who patrons us, and does not matter the level. It means a lot to us.
Yeah.
So Josh will just continue to read forever.
And keep messing up some names, and I apologize.
If he messes up your name, write him directly.
Absolutely.
So anyway, that is all of that. And I think, Josh, you can start messing up some names.
Indeed. Well, thanks for listening. And remember, we love your feedback. So consider leaving us an iTunes review. Email us with comments or questions at tabletopgametalk@gmail.com and visit us at the site tabletopgametalk.com to learn more about becoming part of the conversation. Finally, a huge thank you to our patrons, Emil Gilljam, Shane Paul, George, Tom Bly, Jason Strong, Lucas Hartso, Michael O, Josh Arntz, Shepherd, C. Marie, Brian Arnold, Sean Kelly, Joseph Lee, John Merkel, Daniel Shepherd, Rudy Liu, Benjamin Heimowitz, Jerry Huang, Alex Brown, and Mike Smith.
And Adam Harrison and Stephen Seitz, who I forgot to put at the bottom of the show.
If you'd like to support us via Patreon and be auto-entered into all of our giveaways, you can find out more at tabletopgametalk.com/Patreon. Until next week, when we talk about the exciting topic of rule books, keep playing games and having fun.
Good night. Yeah, I'm going to make you guys edit my rule book next week.
I just don't know how you're going to make it exciting.
What? It's a rule book.